Welcome to Dad's on the Air for the 11th of December 2007. Interesting show coming up. We've got Joep Zander, if I've pronounced that right. He's an activist and a well-known figure in the Netherlands. Very interesting figure over there. He'll be on a little bit after 11. We'll be playing a new series called Hero Joe, the frantic activities of a separated dad called Hero Joe, which should be very entertaining. We should note on the show, we have the very first woman Prime Minister, or she's acting Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, is holding the reins, and as far as anyone can tell, the sky hasn't yet fallen in. Anyone noticed?
No, she seems to be doing a good job. Well, she's, you know, we've got the matched set now. We've got Helen Clark in New Zealand, we've got Gloria Arroyo in the Philippines, and we've got some, I forget her name, some woman just taken over in Argentina, I believe. So we've sort of got the, you know, the big guns are all women down here in the Southern Hemisphere. The girls are taken over.
God. Why can't we just have 50-50? 50-50, that's what we want, equality. So, you know, good on her and go girl and all that sort of stuff. Although, it's, of course, it was one of the great tragedies of the past government that the huge prejudice and bias against separated fathers in this country was not addressed by the Howard government. They were too scared of the feminist vote or the women's vote to fix this appalling problem in our community. And it is one of the great social issues of our time. It remains to be seen how this will play out with the new Labor government. There's not a huge amount of hope, but Kevin Rudd has said he will rule for all Australians.
Well, first. The problem is not going to go away, is it? So
it's not going to go away,
we'll
no.
We'll be back.
First up, the Child Support Agency, as you always expect at Christmas time. Lovely agency that they are. This is your Christmas present. With Christmas coming soon, the General Manager of the Child Support Agency, Matt Miller, rapidly becoming one of the most despised people in the country as a result of running the Child Support Agency, just as despised as ever it was, says separated parents who have outstanding child support should pay before leaving the country or risk being stopped at the airport. Mr. Miller said parents who have not met their child support obligations can generally be prevented from leaving Australia through a departure prohibition order. This is one of those great innovations by the Howard government, that if you're fleeing the country for a better economic future somewhere else, you can pay up to, you know, 42% tax. Plus 37% childhood, you can pay over 80% of your income in tax and child support in this country. And if you're fleeing for a better life somewhere else, you'll be stopped at the airport. Parents not doing the right thing by the children this Christmas will find it even harder to escape their responsibilities. Don't we have a right to expect government agencies to conduct themselves in a reasonable and proper manner, which the Child Support Agency notoriously has never done? He goes on to say the Child Support Agency now uses data matching technology provided by the Department of Immigration and Citizenship to target non-paying parents who historically travel during the Christmas holiday period. What if you're heading off for a very well-earned holiday with your kids and some bureaucrat 5 seconds out of a women's studies course has deemed, and they can just, which means made up, your income to be anything they like, and is blocking you taking your kids overseas?
No, according to Matt Miller, solo fathers don't have any rights to have a happy Christmas with their children. That sort of thing is not in the CSA department guidelines.
Well, that's quite right, because we don't have any rights as parents. They were taken away from us in 1996, so it's a bit like the Jews in Germany in the 40s. They had no rights, and look what happened to them.
Yes. Another story. A British firefighter who has donated his sperm to a lesbian couple could have two babies is being forced to pay thousands of pounds in child support.
Oh, wonderful.
Andy Baffey, 37, initially agreed to help Sharon and Terry Arnold after being assured he would not have to be involved in the upbringing of the young boy and girl or have any financial responsibility towards them. But the British government's child support agency has begun docking his pay to force him to contribute to the children's upbringing because the lesbian couple have split up. Mr. Baffy has launched unprecedented course action in an attempt to ensure he cannot be recognised as a legal parent to the children. These women wanted to be parents and take on all the responsibilities it brings, he told the Evening Standard newspaper in the UK. I would never have agreed to this unless they'd been living as a committed family, and now I can't afford to have children with my own wife. It's crippling me financially.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? So the gay couple got his kids. He can't afford to have any with his natural wife in a natural way. I mean, this is...
Because they split up.
And they've split up now. I mean, that's a sort of almost a Monty Python script, that one.
There was another case just the other day of a couple that had their sperm frozen for future fertilisation, and they split up. And the wife wants to now use that frozen sperm for children, and he doesn't want to be part of that.
And did she win or not?
It's still before the court.
Still before the court.
So it's not his sperm anymore. Once it's outside his body, he has no rights to decide its future or where it should go or what it should be used for or something ridiculous like that.
Scary, isn't it?
Now, there's been some huge steps. One story that we followed really closely here is the intervention in the Northern Territory. This is the Australian government's intervention in the remote communities in the Northern Territory, which have basically collapsed under a huge strain of drugs and alcohol and
years of neglect by the Howard government, the fact that there's no...
Billions of dollars have been poured into
billions
these communities
of dollars,
and it's all gone nowhere.
No workable social policy.
But the indigenous population is absolutely fearful that their children are going to be removed again. And in Bararana, which is New South Wales, the Aboriginal social workers say the indigenous community there is confused and fearful after the attempt at the removal of four children from their families last week, which sent two of them into hiding. And Grace Beeson, who runs the Our Gunya Women's Refuge, describes scenes reminiscent to the film Rabbit Proof Fence, when Department of Community Services workers and police arrived at the children's house to take four of them into care on Thursday. Now, bystanders watched as police used capsicum spray on emotional fathers and ripped two children, aged 3 and 6 months, from their 18 and 19-year-old mother's arms.
Well, that is absolutely criminal. Really, I mean, let's face it. There's also the case of that girl who was raped 10 times. She was in foster care in Queensland, and they decided to repatriate her with her people, whoever, and she went back to the tribe and was raped, then promptly, a 10-year-old girl, promptly raped by 10 men who have since been community service or given some fairly half-assed kind of sentences for what is really a disgusting crime.
Absolutely. But it leaves docs also in a bit of a dilemma, doesn't it? Because if you leave the children with some parents, the children are in danger. And by taking them away and putting them into foster care also can present problems.
Well, this is a disgraceful article written by Phoebe Stewart under the heading Dying Foster Care Girl 12 Was Covered in Ants. And this is almost too horrifying to read, but I'm going to try it. Phoebe Stewart writes, on the day of her death, a 12-year-old girl in foster care lay in the dirt outside her Darwin home, delirious with pain and covered in ants, a court heard today. She was so sick that she defecated in her clothes and could not walk without help, Darwin magistrates court heard. She died after allegedly being laid outside in the dirt by one of her carers, who the court heard is alleged to have said if she wanted to soil herself, she might as well go outside and act like the animal she is. The girl died from acute septicemia in a Royal Darwin Hospital emergency room on July 12th. Two women, one 42, the other 43, have been charged with her manslaughter. Director of Public Prosecutions Charles Coates told Darwin Magistrates Court the girl was limping 3 weeks before her death and during the last week of her life needed help to go to the toilet. There is evidence that she urinated and defecated in her clothes as she was unable to go to the toilet, Mr. Coates said. I mean, I can't even read anymore. This is something out of the 13th century torture chamber or something. I mean, how could you do that to a 12-year-old girl? I mean, and call yourself a carer?
Questions need to be asked, obviously. How are these foster parents selected and carers, you know? Mm. Because they're obviously, in some cases, in more danger than leaving with the parents.
Well, this is bureaucracy.
It'll be very, very interesting to see how the Labor government deals with the whole intervention issues up in the Northern Territory. We're going to a quick break and we'll be back talking with Colin Englert about all the new antenatal programs that are available for dads around Sydney these days. We'll be back.
Working all night long. Put my daughter on my knee. And she said, Daddy, what's wrong? She whispered in my ear so sweet. You know what she said? She said,
And we're talking with Colin Anglett from the Father Link program. Are you there, Colin?
Yeah, John. G'day.
No, well, thanks very much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
Right.
Now, it's a great step forward, I think, having antenatal programs for dads in the hospitals.
Yeah, well, look, I'm doing it at the Royal Hospital for Women at Randwick, which they began the project there about 2 years ago. It first started about 6 years ago at St George Hospital, and I think it's been going at Sutherland Hospital for about 2 years. And the project, it's called the Fatherlinks Project, and it's part of the antenatal birth classes they have running at hospitals, where the husbands and wives come along to the birth, usually of their first child, but sometimes they do follow up. And the idea was that it became apparent that it's important for men to have an opportunity to express issues that are arising, particularly for them.
And you run these, you are a facilitator in one of these programs.
Yeah, I'm a what's called a group facilitator. And I first became aware of it when I was taking my son to, those community play groups.
Right.
And I had some flyers up there saying active dads who are willing to participate as volunteers in this program to facilitate men's groups as part of the antenatal program, so that men could sit down and have an opportunity for them to talk about issues that are arising for them. And I just thought it sounded like a really good...
Good idea.
Good idea. So,
and it's true, isn't it, that all the focus is on the woman, naturally enough, and she's the one going through it. But the blokes do have an awful lot of questions, and it's a huge change in life for them.
Well, there's an enormous change to your identity as a man, in a way, and I like to think of it as a very deep, enriching process. There's a lot of just ordinary social changes and economic implications, but.
As in, you're chained to a job for 18 years.
Yeah, and there's a big change to your idea of yourself as a man, and a deepening of your sense of yourself as a man, I think. That's just my view.
Oh, it's much easier to just sit on a bar stool and run around being a responsible adult.
Yeah. Well, that's right. That's one of the things you have to think about, what that part might play in your life. Just these days, things have changed a lot for men, in terms of, just socially, they suddenly have a new sense of themselves as, they're expected to be, it will continue to be a provider, but, probably without the input of their partner's, wage, if that's been the case. It's pretty well a norm to be working, helping in the household as well. But you're expected to also be a nurturer and a supporter, and your relationship can change with your partner a lot. And a lot of men have anxiety and feelings about that. A lot of apprehensions, a lot of things they just want to talk about themselves. And normally in the context of being in the group with their partners, they sometimes don't want to talk about that because they don't want to be worrying their wives. I mean, ostensibly they're seen as their role has been seen as just simply there to support.
Yeah, they're the brick.
The brick. But the brick has to be able to bend. And if you're just going to be a brick, you could end up breaking.
So, what sort of questions do the blokes? What bothers
sort of
them the most in these groups? Yeah.
Look, a lot of men are concerned about how they're going to achieve a balance. Most men want to participate actively in the life of their children. The big question is how to manage to do that. One of the difficult things, I suppose, these days is that economic pressures mean that both mother and father have got to work.
How do you do without the extra wage is a huge practical issue.
There's pressure there, and a lot of men are concerned about how they're going to manage that. I mean, one of the things we do talk about in the group is what is it about their own fathering the way they were fathered that they want to bring to the way they father their child. So we are looking at, sure, there's a lot of economic issues and practical issues, but also we're trying to look at a lot of the new feelings that are coming up for men as they approach fatherhood.
It is a major change in social status and the way they regarded people. I just notice if you're travelling with children, for instance, people are so much friendlier and they respect you if you're carrying children around, whereas if you're just a single bloke on the road, you're regarded with suspicion. It is a huge shift in the way you're viewed, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, possibly. I think that the responsibilities of having children for is a socially recognised thing. You know, I mean, I think people acknowledge it and respect it as something that's it's a big calling.
Yeah,
you know, for a lot of people, it's a long journey. You know,
it's changed significantly. Do you think, you were talking about it earlier, about the whole thing has changed significantly over the last few decades? I mean, you just walk down any shopping mall and the kids are crawling all over their dads, and
yeah.
You just see them everywhere now. The dads are pushing the kids in prams, and
it's a great thing. I can't remember exactly where the study was, but studies have shown in the US and the UK. That you know, that active fathering is really beneficial to the development of children, both, you know, academically but socially, more importantly too.
Oh, huge. So how do people find out about these antenatal courses? Is there a website, or they just approach the hospital, or what do they do?
I think the best thing is to approach their area hospital. As I say, there's a Fatherlinks project going at Randwick, at the Randwick Hospital, and
right.
There's one at St George,
right.
And there's one at Sutherland. So as far as I know, I'm not sure, where are you?
We're broadcasting out of Liverpool.
So which, the main hospital there, I mean, I'm not sure.
There was a program at one time, because we did an interview on it, but I never heard any more of it, so
yeah.
I don't know that it survived very well, but there have been sporadic attempts to start these sort of things in the various hospitals.
Look, I think you have to have the support of the hospital service there to get it going, I guess.
And is it that anybody that goes to an antenatal class is then invited, you know, if the blokes are showing up with the women for these classes?
Well,
what happens?
I think you have to have a commitment by the health service to want to do it, and which is the only reason it's going at Randwick at the moment, is that there's a solid commitment there and a recognition of the importance of fathers to be participating in all ways and as individuals themselves in the process, so that, I mean, so you need that somehow to have it put into the infrastructure of the hospital.
Right. And do you think it has really ongoing benefits for the kids over, you know, in the years to come? Dads might feel more comfortable or something?
Do you think that it would make them more... I think that... I can only speak personally, John, and, you know, I don't think there's... a greater thing to do in a way than be an active part of your children's upbringing and be there for them. That's my personal view, but I think the point of the Fatherlinks thing is really to give men that opportunity just to really start to think about the changes and to raise issues that are particular to them.
Are they concerned about practical things, just like feeding kids and, you know, bottles and nappies and stuff like that? Or
a little bit, but to some degree, the antenatal class is the main class deals with that. I mean, I think a lot of men are concerned about, the change in their relationships with their partners. Where do they get their models from for being a father? Can be a question that comes up for men. Some men, I mean, obviously balancing your work and family life is important. Some men are anxious about how they'll deal with things like being there present when their wife's experiencing pain in labour, for example. They want to know how they'll cope with experiencing that themselves.
Mm.
you know, there's a lot of issues that come up, like, you know, breastfeeding, how can they participate, you know, help in that, if there are any problems there. Postnatal depressions and anxiety for some men. I think the great thing is, you know, not unlike your program, I suppose, that men can get an opportunity to talk about issues that are particularly of concern to them.
Colin, you just mentioned that dads are concerned about where they get their role model from. One would have thought that would have been their own fathers. Don't they consider them as good role models?
Well,
not always.
that's the point of the question, is that for a lot of us don't really think about that. There are things that we want to bring with us. So, I mean, we're imperfect beings, so we do the very best we can in life in the roles that we take on. But I mean, there may be times when there might be some aspects of your own upbringing that you don't want to bring into your parenting. I mean, for example, I mean, in schools, for example, now we don't have our children routinely, hit with a cane in the way I did when I was a child. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that we don't want to change. And I mean, if we look at it as a cycle, there may be things that we don't want to keep in a cycle. Mm-hmm. And in that way, we, as fathers, I tend to think of us all as pioneers in a way, where we've got to get out and lay some new tracks sometimes and change the direction we might be headed in if we can see a better way for our children.
And there is a definite change, isn't there? There's a real much greater involvement in the 50s, the classic 50s, for example.
I think so. And there's an expectation, in fact, today that you'll be more involved, you know.
Yeah.
And there's evidence that it benefits the child.
And lo and behold, if you don't do the dishes.
Exactly, yeah.
And why not? Put the toilet seat down.
but also, I've got to say that it benefits you as a man as well and as a parent to be more involved, you know.
Yeah, and definitely benefits the kids as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just in closing, do you just want to just sum up what FatherLink does and how people can find them, basically, or how they could get involved if they're, you know, they're sitting there and they're about to face their first baby, and really, it's a pretty scary thing, really. I mean, people are sort of...
Well, look,
not everyone's overjoyed at the prospect, you know. A lot of people are genuinely really alarmed by it.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of joy in the whole process and optimistic and euphoric expectation, and at the same time it's just a paradoxically there's a lot of anxiety and stress and all those things as well. I can say that the great value of FatherLinks is that it validates men's experiences as well as giving them an actual opportunity to sit down and talk about issues that are coming up for them as individuals in approaching fatherhood. I mean, in a way, it's unfair to expect men to be providing practical and emotional support and help if their own needs are not being acknowledged as being significant as well at the same time. If you're required to be there present and participating, then there are a lot of other issues that come up for men. So the really wonderful thing about it is that men do want to talk about these feelings, and if they're in a safe place where they can do it, and they can see that, you know, it takes courage sometimes for some people. If they can, that's a great advantage of FatherLinks. And look, just as far as getting in touch, those hospitals that I mentioned have those programs going. You could certainly talk to the hospital in your area about getting one started, I suppose. And
they could probably talk to FatherLinks about the model to go on. Because it's run by blokes for blokes, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that is one of the powers of it.
Yeah, well, that's one of the great things, because men can relax and they know they're going to be talking about things that are of concern and interest to them.
So can you imagine your own life without kids?
Oh, no.
It's completely transformed.
Yeah.
Good on
what
you.
What life.
Yeah, what life. That thing that you used to do before you were completely consumed. All right, we've been talking with Colin Anglett. He is with the program Father Links, and you can contact that through the Royal Women's Hospital in Randwick now. Sutherland, St George Hospitals all have that program, Father Links. And also ask your local hospital if you're listening outside those areas whether or not they have a program for dads, new dads. Thank you so much for coming on to Dads on the Air.
You're welcome. Thanks very much, John.
Thank you, Colt.
Bye.
Okay, well, Damien Kringas, welcome back to Dads on the Air. Damien Kringas has prepared a radio play for us, the first part of which we will be playing this morning, and it is entitled Hero Joe. So here's the first part of Hero Joe.
Joe Carbine was just like any other guy. He'd worked hard, did everything by the book. He was your average Joe, a time card punching 9-to-5 kind of man, a meat and three veggies bloke who liked to watch the news and read the paper. But things had changed. Now, as he faced the black bastard dog, yeah, He was looking head-on at the dog of a middle-aged crisis, and just for good measure was diving smack into the mother of all divorces.
This court is now in session.
Mr. Joseph Carbine, you're before my court in the matter of Carbine versus Carbine.
Yes, Your Honor.
Were you unfaithful, sir?
No, Your Honor.
Violent?
No, Your Honor.
A drinker, perhaps?
No, Your Honor.
It says here you were charged with losing interest in your relationship. It says here you showed more interest in collecting stamps than in your own wife. Like it's your choice to please yourself.
He'd rather lick his stamps than take me out.
We, Mr. Carbine, live in a world where obligation is duty, sir, not a choice. How do you plead, Mr. Carbine? Don't bother then. You're guilty. I sentence you to lose all your assets, to have limited access to your children, and just for good measure, I'm throwing in an apprehended violence order. Take him away.
Joe walked out a broken man, past all the other schmoes waiting their turn, sitting like circus monkeys waiting for the knife-throwing act, lighting their cigarettes from smouldering butts.
How'd you go, Joe?
Joe said nothing.
I hear some guys do themselves in. Is it that bad, Joe?
Is it that bad, Joe? The words echoed in his head, like someone had chucked a spanner down a drain pipe. He stopped to collect his thoughts.
You can't stand there, mister! Move on!
Joe walked on down the street.
Hey, mister, you want to buy a watch? No point walking if you don't know what the time is.
On the way back to where he now lived, Joe was feeling pretty low. Sure, he felt sorry for himself, but there was also something way down deep inside.
Hey, watch where you're going!
Something working its way up. Up from the dismal depths of his despair.
Hey, guy, you got a spare dollar?
Sorry, I just got divorced.
Divorced? Tell me about it.
Were you married once?
Best thing I ever did. Get married, get divorced. Some guys go through life and learn nothing. Absolutely nothing. But look at me.
What'd you learn?
Well, Tuesday night they got custody.
Joe kept right on walking.
Hey, get out of the way! Can't you see I'm late for work?
Joe arrived home.
Hey, Joe! You're 2 weeks behind! This ain't no charity!
In his cold and lonely boarding house room, he sat on the sagging mattress, and where most would be sobbing like babies with poo-filled pants, Joe nursed a powerful urge. Not anger, not revenge. No, it was different, and it compelled him to speak out loud.
Wait a minute. Am I going to sit here in this boarding house?
Get quiet in there! That's right, you're drunk!
Sit here and cry like a babbling baby, am I? No. I'm going to do something. Do something to right this wrong. Not just talk about it like some beer-filled Friday night yo-yo at the club. I'm going to dedicate my life to the pursuit of justice. Fight against evil and protect the rights of fathers everywhere. From this boarding house...
Hey, I'm trying to drink myself a glass of air!
From this boarding house, I will become a hero! But not just any kind. A superhero! I will become Hero Joe!
I don't know if you've been told, Hero Joe, he ain't no schmo. I don't know if you've been told, Hero Joe, well, he's the GOAT.
And so it was, from that day on, mild-mannered Joe Carbine was gone for good. In his place, Hero Joe fights for justice and the rights of downtrodden fathers everywhere. You have been listening to the Independence Jones Radio Playhouse in association with the Dulwich Hill Men's League. Be sure to tune in again for the next power-backed episode of...
Hero!
Joe! That was Hero Joe, the first installment in what I think, or what I imagine should be a very, very interesting series. We have another five shows to play in that, so every Tuesday morning around 11 o'clock you can brace yourselves for that one. Hero Joe will be coming at you through Dad's on the Air from now on. What did you think of that one, Peter?
That was great. That was excellent. That was funny. Yep, I enjoyed that. And now we're going to go to something totally different. We're going to go to an interview with a Dutch activist who has been very active in the father's right in the Netherlands for many years.
Well, there's nothing worse than an inactive activist, let's face it.
He's very active, and he still is, and he will continue to campaign until real justice is achieved for both parents and children.
So he's got a big campaign ahead of him, by the sounds of things.
Many years to go, yeah. I would say. His name is Joop Zander, and we're going to go to the interview now.
I'm speaking with Joop Zander of the Netherlands. He's one of the leading activists, has been for many years. He's been on a hunger strike. He has taken his government to the European Court of Human Rights in France several years ago. He's also a painter, an artist, a musician. He's very active still in the movement, and we're speaking with him in his house. I'm very fortunate to be here speaking to him today. Joop, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Yeah, hi, Peter.
Joop, what do you see as the main obstacles faced by the fatherhood movement in the Netherlands and perhaps in Europe, because you've been very active in the larger scheme of things, in 2007?
Well, I think the obstacles are quite international and not so different from obstacles in other Western countries. You could say that it's all about the same in all Western countries. The difference is more with Islamic countries. That works another way around. But what is the whole development from this 30 years of increasing the false statistics? Is what we reached is that it's now a known problem. It's quite known, but you know it's known on the surface, this problem. So what we still have to reach is that people understand what is the depth of the problem. What is the depth for fathers and children who experience the parental alienation, experience that they are alienated from their children. And what we really need to know, what really more people need to know, is what is the position of the juridical system and the political system in this issue about fathers and children. And most people, including, I must say, a lot of father activists, including me, are a bit afraid to say exactly what is wrong, because it's too bad. It's too bad to see that it has something to do with slavery sometimes, with real oppression. When we say that in a real democratic, what we call democratic society, then people say, well, he must be crazy, because we have done so much to make this a democratic society. Now, what's not democratic is the Islamists or all the other people. That's the problem. Although, in some Islamic culture is better keeping contacts between children and men especially, but as well in general, they're not so bad to mothers and children. So I must say, at the point of this, perhaps other societies are better than are even better than here. But it's not easy to say in this period of Islam did all wrong and we did all good. You know, it's really the idea we have a democratic system and this doesn't exist. You can say dads who have problems, dads are sad, okay, and they're not handled very well, a problem, we should improve it, we should do some research, but most people don't want to see what's behind it, what this real system of power abuse from judges and politicians, how this works and how it should be. How we should get rid of it, because we should know how it works, and then we can say we should get rid of it.
So you think the judicial system is the major problem? And you see Islamic, it's interesting, you see the Islamic doctrine or culture giving a better outcome to parents, perhaps, when they, if, do they actually separate, what's, do you know much about them, whether they,
well,
when they
I
separate?
I just wrote a very small thing about it. I don't, I'm not very specialized in Islamic divorce situations and so on, but it's just what I really want to say. Not Islamic system is better, you know. There are things which are worse, perhaps. But it's not that our democratic system is better, you know. It's not that. It's too bad our system to say we are a good democratic system. And I can imagine that some Islamic countries or Islamic people are very surprised and very frustrated in living in this kind of society in which family bonds are so
undervalued.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I meant to say. So, in this way, perhaps on this point, in the Islamic system has some things where we can learn from, which they do better. So we shouldn't be so arrogant to say we are the good thing.
224636 or visit beyond.
There are many fatherhood groups in Europe. Do they work well together, or do they mainly run individually in their countries or individual operations, or do they unite much and do things more organized?
You mean within the country or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or inter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the strength of the father movement at this moment is the networking. You know, most fatherhood organizations work bad, are diffused by quarrels and people seeking more self-esteem, which they lost in the fight for their children. They lost a lot of self-esteem. They fight back for that to kind of get a kind of psychological reward when being big in a kind of movement. It doesn't work very good. In all European countries, fatherhood movement is at the best when it are networks of well-willing people like me who work together by phone, by internet, by mail. There are some good organizations. We need organizations, you know. It's not that I want to say we just network, but sometimes I think, well, at this moment, Fathers for Justice was, and hopefully still is, a good organization which works, which does the good thing, because they're not only building their theory and building their lobby, but they as well invite people to do physical things, to climb onto bridges and things like that. What people really, public bridges. Which, of course, is a kind of symbol for the bridge, you know, it's between children and you. And, well, that's what fathers need, you know, because they're getting depressed, they're getting stressed, and they need a thing to do, really. Not only theoretical, not only in your theoretical, not only in your mind, but just do something. Let's see, let the people see we are here, we are fathers, we are good fathers, but we need to do something, because You don't want us to do suicide in huge amounts, which really happens now. You know, a lot of people, a lot of fathers, as you know, a lot of men suicide, and that's terrible. We should give them something to do.
Yes,
climb bridges. Someone has to climb bridges. Someone has to write things down. Someone has to make music. There must be make more in art, of course. Yes. That's my. Of course, it's my occupation as well, but it needs to be done because it expresses the feeling. It's the way we can express feelings. It's really a measure of the state of a movement, what they can do with cultural things, and it's really a sign for the low state of further movement that we do so less with cultural things, with music, with paintings, and so on. So we should work on that.
And that's something that has been done in the past too, to abolish slavery and the civil rights movement and various human rights movements in the past have also been, the artists have been very much in the forefront of bringing that to the population.
When you compare several liberation movements, if I may say it like that,
well, it is,
right? It is like that, then you can see if you look at it, at this, those deliberations which have been passed, which have been done, you can see how important it was that people expressed themselves and their emotions in literature, in music, and so on. And that's necessary. That's really necessary.
We are speaking with Joop Zander from the Netherlands, a very active member of the Fatherhood Movement, and has been for many years. We'll be back after the break.
You left me here a long, long time ago, when I was still a child, and she could not bear to hear the young boy cry. So I learned to keep it safe and keep it safe inside. I learned to keep it locked up safe inside. Should I rage against you, rage against you, or count my blessings so many to count, yeah? Should I rage against you, rage against you, or count my blessings so many to count? As a young man, I tried to walk the way with no anchor or no sign. So I took the easy path, and it led straight down to hell, where I traded my spirit for a taste of bitter wine. I'd learned to keep it locked up safe inside. Should I rage against you, rage against you, or count my blessings so many to count, yeah? Should I rage against you, rage against you, or count my blessings so many to count? The boy becomes the man becomes the father, and father starts to see the world through a different light. In the early hours, I feel the father power, giving to, giving through this child in my eyes. I smile to think how foolish I have been. 'Cause you were there, always by my side, a witness to the gifts of love these children bring. I thank you for the breath you've given me. Should I rage against you, rage against you, my blessings, count my blessings.
We're back with Beds on the Air.
We're back with Joop Zander in the Netherlands. Joop, what do you see as perhaps the main grievances expressed by members of fatherhood groups that come to attend those groups? What do you see as the main grievances today from the fathers against the system?
Well, I think, of course, it's that they are separated from their children. It's not always so that they can express that very well. Often it comes to a kind of sublimated expression in the struggle for the finances, about the child support payments and so on, because they don't want to pay for a contract for a child which they don't have living relationship, feeding educational relationship with. You can't expect people to pay for, it's really not understandable for fathers that they have to pay for such a situation. It is perverse. I often use the word perverse for that, because it's, you know, when it happens, they say, yeah, well, those fathers only care about the money and they don't want to give money. But it's another thing which is behind. And often it expresses itself as the struggle about the money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, of course, for fathers, we have a long history for men and for us to not express our emotions, not to deal with relations with children. And we're still capable. We're still very good in doing things with children. We can still see that in researches how much fathers are needed. But on the other side, we have there is a long history of oppression since the start of, since the start of the Industrial Revolution. We are a bit separated from our children, like Warren Farrell expresses very, very good in his books. He calls us the Catch 22. Yeah. The impossible thing of being away from home and loving your children by being away from them.
Yeah.
So that's a very difficult point for fathers. But you know, we are 150 or 200 years in that system, so that has some effects. So it's very difficult for fathers to do the right thing in this situation,
yeah.
In which they are still and even more oppressed than in the start of this Industrial Revolution, where they at least were seen as kind of working heroes in the start. You know, now we are the when we are working for our children, it's not good. We should care for our children. When we care for our children, it's taken away from us. So we have nothing.
So we're in a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, it's lose on every side. And sometimes while we grip them, we grip a thing like fighting for the money, and then say, because that's what a lot of fathers want, to fall back to what they are good in, because we did that 200 years in the history to support, financial support of family, and we fall back to that, and the discussion and struggle goes back to that. But really, behind it, it's of course about the contact with the children. And when it doesn't succeed, I must say that this feeling of injustice is then again over the injustice in general. Then after that, when you're going on as a father, try to look through the system, then you feel that you're living in a not really democratic system, and you get very annoyed about that.
Yes.
And I must admit that for me, that's a kind of feeling which sometimes overrides, the other feeling of injustice to your children, because it's so, you know, it comes to it, it comes over it. You understand what I mean?
It's all part of it. One leads to another.
One leads to another, but it's, you know, you lose your child, that's terrible, but then comes the point you're not recognized in this trauma. And not only that, you're not only not recognized, but you're seen as an outlaw. As a non-existing person, a member of the society.
You become dehumanized.
Dehumanized. So that's then the feeling which, and then when you're in this state, when you experience all this, you're in a state of feeling dehumanized, and that's the overwhelming feeling. On the end of the whole story, and it's not only about your children; it's about the total feeling of,
There's some excellent women leaders now who provide very strong voices in support of the fatherhood movement. This is not unlike the feminist movement of the past, which also recognised the importance of strong male voices speaking on their behalf. What, if any, role do you think women are going to play in the debate in the coming years?
Yeah. Well, it's difficult. I mean, it's very good that women speak out, of course, for what I see as the real motives behind the feminist movement is that we all should be equal, seen as equal parents, not the same parents, we're not the same, men are not always the same as women, but as equal.
Different.
We're seen different, but yeah. Okay, so it's very good that some people, especially the women who come from the feminist movement and see
inequality.
Yeah, the inequality, but they almost forgot to see that there could be an injustice on the other side of caring men, father. So they speak out, and there are some very good examples of that. Like you said, Mary Clear, and in Holland we have Doreen Pessers, we have other people who are important in society, did very important things in the feminist movement. Like Doreen Pessers was one of the status of founders of Clara Wichman Institute. It's an institute for women and justice, and really that people were in the start of the feminist movement now come on and to say, well, it's not right. Really,
we've gone off the track.
We've gone really off the track. Yeah, so that's very good to see that, and it helps us very much. But on the other hand, we shouldn't forget that we have to be taken serious ourselves. The leaders and the spokesmen of the father movement, of the fathers, of the men, should not depend only on those women speakers who are very good. And that's what I often see, on the micro level as on the macro level. Just before you arrived here, I had a phone call from a woman who spoke for her boyfriend who had children from his ex, which problems. That often happens. And it's very good, of course, that there's women involved in the situation and help to solve the situation. But on the other side, it's not really good that I don't speak directly with the father behind in this problem, you know? Yes. And that often happens. That's on the micro level. And as well, it happens on the macro level where some women really speak for a father's movement. In a lot of father's movement, there are women who are... sometimes are on the board of that organization and are better acceptable for the press and so on. But it's not really what... It gives some strange effects as well, you know, that they get a kind of mother... there's a kind of motherhood in this father organization in which the fathers are be mothered again or smothered in a feral term, you know. So that's not why we're growing big.
So it's important that men need to be accepted as human beings speaking out for themselves as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's why what I wanted to say. I hope I expressed this well. Yeah. Well, so, but absolutely, again, people like Mary Cleary, like all that are really good, you know. So yes, that's we need that.
Do you know of any countries in Europe or indeed the world that you see as having a successful model in place which guarantees that children remain in contact with both parents following parental separation?
Well, politics and all things in this world are too much international. We don't have special isolated places in where eating is going well. But there are better and worse situations. I told you something about Islamic law, which is a bit better perhaps for this thing about keeping contact with children.
But say in the Western world, do you see any countries?
In the Western world, I think our neighbor country, Belgium, is one of the best at this moment, because they got a new law just a year ago, September, or is it already? Yeah, it's a year ago. They got a new law, and that's about equal parenting, but it's going a bit farther than what is in Australia now. So it's really and they have to the first alternative when people divorce is to get equal 50-50 parenthood, 50-50, and only when they got other arrangements, which of course is allowed, then they can get another arrangement. But there is a right to have the children 50-50 cared for by mothers and fathers. And that's gone quite far in Belgium.
Because that's basically what everyone strives for, isn't it? It's 50-50 shared parenting as a starting point.
As a starting point, exactly. That's very important because we often are ridiculized because people say, well, they want a 50-50 and the children actually walk around. That's not what we want to say.
what exactly to say is, well, that's a starting point. When both parents have the starting point 50-50, they have a situation and they have both interest in dealing about the situation. Yeah. You know, and when one of the two is the boss and can say everything, there's no interest of the mother in dealing with the father. She only says what has to be done to the father. And if not, or even, you know, so if you say it's 50-50 and then you going to deal, see what's for your situation the best. The
70
best
or something.
Can be everything about. Yeah. Even if fathers have a small time for the children, that can be very important. It depends on the situation. It's very individual and people have to do it the way they wanted to do it. It's not that we say we should impress that this kind of 50-50
is. Right.
But I think one of the effects of this 50 of this starting point will be that fathers care more for the children because they have a kind of right and they have input and they can be seen as a kind of waste. You know, themselves waste and they waste time to the children for educating the children. What you need in education, I'm a pedagogue, it's not a very known term in English, but it's kind of child psychologist, you know.
That's okay.
My first professional building was that.
Right.
So, and I've always learned when you indicate, when you care for children, you should guarantee that care. You know, it's nothing which you can give at one moment or leave at another moment.
Yes.
You have children, you have to care for them the lifetime, till they are adults.
You're always
a parent. But you stay parents, you
That's
know.
Right.
And as a parent, you have a responsibility and you have a feeling. Mm-hmm. And ride that feeling that that it's your biological child. Not always has to be biological, but that biological hit a special strength to this connection with your children. And it's not exchangeable, you know? In itself, it's not exchangeable. It shouldn't be exchangeable. For a good education, for a good care, it shouldn't be exchangeable. It shouldn't be one father and then the other father, but that's often the practice now.
Yes.
The same mother, but changing fathers.
Yes.
That's not fatherhood. That's changing
male role model in their lives. But do you think any actions over the last 30 years, there's been many actions taken, like yourself, the hunger strikes, you've taken your government to the court, the Human Rights Court, do you think any actions by any groups have had some effect at all in the greater debate?
I think it did.
Yeah.
I know from my own action, the hunger strike was very impressive here in the local press and a bit in the national press and a very little bit in the international press.
Do you think that made
really
a difference?
Has. Yeah, that made really a difference at that moment. I don't want another action as well. It's not that I experienced it in this situation, you know.
Yes.
I was so decided to do exactly this what I did. So I go to the Brink, that's the central marketplace here in the center of the town.
Yeah.
I placed there a little caravan tent, you know.
Right.
Just in front of the courthouse. They were very angry, the courthouse. And the mother was very angry. Mm-hmm. But I got permission from the local government. I was very happy for that.
Yeah.
So, and I was so decided to do that. No, I only managed to do that 12 days because it was very, there were so many people coming along, but I felt it had some impact on so a lot of, so much people. So what I want to say, it's not that I did it well, but it goes well when you really believe in something and you really do that, what you want to do, and you really see from this is it. This is what I want to make this. And that works. It works. You know, of course, I was misled after, and then there was a very fast meeting with the judge, and he said, well, we're going to change things, and I was hopeful, and that was one of the reasons I stopped the strike, and I was a bit naive about that, you know, but okay, it had some impact. On the public, and actions at this moment from Father for Justice, who do the same way, I think. I didn't climb the bridges last year. So I'm not sure.
I've already have done a lot. Sometimes I help them, but okay, I'm getting a bit older.
Yeah,
It's done in America since last month. So that are very impressive actions. We have the same impact, you know. You see, that's the people standing for what they want.
And you think that's very important.
And that's very important, because it's not only a political point, it's as well a point for yourself, in which you free yourself from the oppression, your individual oppression. It's the thing you can do. What can you do with all this oppression, this injustice, this courts, this murder, not seeing your children? But you can... You shouldn't suicide yourself, you know. No. It's a lot, done a lot, so you really should do something which is constructive.
Yeah.
And take some risk, climbing non-violent, absolutely non-violent, but perhaps you take a risk by climbing a bridge or doing a hunger strike like me, but that's exactly what you do.
We are speaking with Joep Zanders from the Netherlands, one of the leading activists in Europe. We'll be back after the break.
Don't come knocking on my front door.
Zander in the Netherlands. You, what part do you think the media has played at this point?
Well, with the media, it's, we're happy to get in it. We're very happy so now and then that we can express ourselves in the media, say what's going wrong, say how bad we feel. But it's seldom, very seldom, that the media go into the deep and really tell their listeners, their readers, what's going wrong with the so-called democratic system in Holland in cases of family law. Family law, what is the half of law business, which is quite important. And they don't tell really what are the faults that are made by the judiciary system, by the political system. They won't go so deep. So sometimes you're invited to go to a program or tell something, and you see that certain things are cut out, or at the last moment you were invited for a program and
they want to hear everything about fatherhood and find it very interesting, caring fathers, what we should do, and all that nice things. And then at the last moment, they look again at your internet site or articles, or don't know what they exactly do, or they feel some pressure from women's groups, and then it's cancelled, just like Warren Farrell describes. And that's not always so easy to describe what happens then. But there is some very important influence by women's groups, I think.
To present a one-sided view,
to present one side and to keep away certain
controversial
especially with statistics. But so somehow feminist groups are very against statistics, I'm afraid.
Right. Yeah.
So what you described about 50% of the children after 2 years get lost from the from the father, and that's an international figure,
yes.
You know, and that how only this figure, how many time and energy it cost me just to say to this media, you should write down that and not what the,
and they don't do it,
and they don't do it, you know, after long years, a bit, but it took so to. And it's just, you know, it's researched. It's really easy when you want it.
So we've got a long way to go, haven't we?
Yeah. And that's what Warren Farrell calls the lace curtain, you know. That's the not very descriptable influence people have against keeping away the truth about this.
It's subtle. Subtle enough. What about the politicians? Do you think they have a good grasp of the issue in general?
In general, no, alas. An important problem what I see often with politicians is that they have experienced this problem themselves.
Yeah.
While both women and men politicians, but especially the men, they keep it away. They don't want to talk anymore about it. They don't want to see it. That's that mechanism we talked before.
Yes.
You have to free yourselves. And what I do is that they have the idea they are not allowed to talk about what they experience themselves. That's not so objective, or you shouldn't talk about yourself. Meanwhile, on the other hand, the feminists and then the women always talk about making personal things, political things, you know. But men don't dare that. So all those politicians which experience these problems themselves could be a great potential to have things changed. But the opposite is that they keep it away. They keep it under control, let's say, you know, and so they don't do anything about the problem. There's some exceptions, like we have here Harry van Bommel, that's a socialist politician who is quite active on fatherhood issues, but it's not his portfolio. His portfolio is international affairs, and sometimes it can be combined, so that's very happy, and he does that.
You've got one voice at least in there.
Yeah, we have one voice at least, and he is very aware of what are the problems of fatherhood. He's an active father himself. He is father. He cares for his children. He knows what it is. So that's a bit, but it's just a bit.
It's a small voice in the wilderness, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about funding? Does your government in the Netherlands, do they give much funding to the fatherhood movement, and in relation to what they give to the?
Not at all.
What about
they don't give anything to fatherhood?
What about the motherhood then?
A lot. It's incredible what happens here. Something we had, as you know, most feminist and political correct politicians find that fathers should care more, and a lot of campaigns on television, on media, paid by the government to convince fathers to care more. We always say, like you would say, I suppose, you should give us some rights to keep it that way, that we're not incidentally caring for our children, we should keep that relation. And, but what happens is then we fight in those campaigns, because in modern times campaign, yeah. So we try to get words, and we have some success sometimes. And last time, what we saw was we have that after that we had some success, you know,
But after that, they cut away the bit of possibility there still was for to give fatherhood emancipation some money. You know, we have a department within a ministry, you know, in the social affairs department. There is some money for emancipation, mostly given for women, but it was not excluded to fathers. But after that campaign, NO5 in the campaign for saying, well, we fathers are sometimes discriminated very much, and even the Minister of Social Affairs said, yeah, that's right, that is a certain forgotten piece. After that, it cut away the theoretical, quite theoretical possibility, because it was almost never done, of giving money to father groups. Because it was then said it's only for helping with women, what was not in it before. This it's incredible the way that they fight back. They are settling something good for fatherhood, we fight for that, and then you have a reaction, a contrary reaction, really hard, very hard.
So the women's group get lots of funding, or?
Well, I must say that's diminished. They still get a lot of funding, but it's diminished for some of them. So, but that money is gone into, you know, the same people work somewhere, the same people who were in women's institutions, like Karel Wichmann Institute, Vrouwenraad. But sometimes those funds are diminished as well, diminished, not gone away, but they're partly gone into what they call in the women's movement mainstream. So all those women who worked in different institutions now work in general research institutes, we get funded that way, and are still as biased against men as the institutions who were before. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it happens at home too.
Yeah.
We've almost run out of time. Just to sum up, after being at the coalface for so many years, is there any genuine message of hope that you can give to all those parents around the world who are basically kept away from the children under the current family justice system?
Well, that's a difficult one. But what I really think, and I'm not the only one, is that fatherhood issues are getting into publicity more and more. So I think there will be changes. So fathers will be less discriminated in future. I'm sure of that. What I think is more difficult is the position of the general position of the judiciary system. I'm feeling now and then very hopeless about the way the Orwell state is rolling towards us with that kind of
Orwellian.
Yeah, Orwellian. Yeah. At least that's a reason to broaden up a coalition, because this misuse of government power, of juridical power, is not only done to fathers but to a lot more people. So I think we should have coalitions for that, and we should be aware that Ron Farrell said that fatherhood issues will be the issue for of this century, and we are moving, and all things the father movement had said, like the Declaration of Langeac, everything is slowly getting true. You know? So that's what I see. Only the problem is it's going too slow, and because it's going not really fundamental, it does have not enough effect. So it has more moral working. But there is a moment that politicians will say, well, we have to do it the way it works, not just make a step which doesn't work but has a kind of moral influence, but we have to make the step to change these things. And that's the point they have to make, but I think this will happen. And I see this from Belgium, for example, not 100%, but that's really a lot of the right direction.
Yeah, we had the late Senator Jeanie Farris in Australia, who said this is probably will become the, or is the sleeper issue of the 21st century.
Yeah, that's except you can say what Farrell says,
same
and
thing.
What other people say. That's what's happening. And what's important is the children of divorce are growing up and are going to experience what it has been for them. They're awake from their sleep, you know, like Doran Rocha, I don't know the English name for it. And they said, well, what has happened to us? You know, and they have, happily we have the concept parental alienation syndrome or parental things around. Or this to recognize. So what is very important is to bring to those children who experienced this the handles to oversee what they have they have experienced.
Bring the truth.
By seeing the truth could be what is written down by Gardner and a lot of other people like me about their parental alienation syndrome. And those children will say, wow, it's important. This has to be changed. Yes.
Yep, unfortunately we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on Dads on the Air and sharing your thoughts with us today. We hopefully we'll be able to do this again sometime. We have been speaking with Joop Zander of the Netherlands, and we'll be back after the break.
Yes, well, that was an interview of Joop Zander from the Netherlands, that our roving reporter over there, Peter Vanderford.
Yeah, it was good. It was a hell of a nice bloke, and it's interesting to see that in Europe they face exactly the same problems that are faced here and elsewhere in the Western democracies.
Yep. We've also had, doing an excellent job of the panelling, Mr. Ian Purdy, who's now... older.
I am indeed. Thank you for acknowledging that, John. I didn't actually feel older until you said that, but I do now.
It's a lot calmer in here today. Last week with all the dancing girls and the birthday cakes.
And the streamers and the dodging the champagne corks flying everywhere.
Don't forget, you go. Oh, and myself, John Stapleton as well, here in the studio. We're going to do, over the next couple of weeks, a best of Dads on the Air for the year. It's been a really momentous year for Dads on the Air. We have a new website, which, thanks to the excellent work of Greg Anderson, has been a really, the website's really up and running. That's www.dadsontheair.net. We'll be putting all the programs up there, but the last year and a half or so's programs are up there at the moment, and that's on dadsontheair.net.
Net,
not to be confused with other sites.
With other sites.
So that's www.dadsontheair.net. You can listen to that and some of the excellent interviews that we did through the year, including Aaron Pitsey, of course. So there was some really great... great stuff that we did for the year, and that should be good.
Yeah, we interviewed Terry Hicks. We interviewed a number of people. We interviewed
Stephen Baskerville is one. Here's an article that he just wrote. Be careful who you marry. Marriage is a foundation of civilized life, he writes. No advanced civilization has ever existed without a married two-parent family. Those who argue that our civilization needs healthy marriages to survive are not exaggerating, and yet I cannot in good conscience urge young men to marry today. For many men, marriage has become nothing less than a one-way ticket to jail. Even the New York Times has reported on how easily the divorce court leads to a jail cell. He was a great interview, Stephen Baskerville, and we might have a little bit of a taste of him as well in the coming couple of weeks. We wish everybody a happy Christmas. Very happy Christmas. If you see your kids, or if you're not, if you get really distressed, don't forget there are Lifeline, the Dad Survival Line for Dads in Distress, who do an excellent job up there at Coffs Harbour. So don't forget, you can get onto our website. There's crisis numbers there, so you can ring Lifeline or Men's Line, or and that's run by men for men, their Dads in Distress group, and they really do a wonderful job. So if it's a really difficult time and you're not getting to see your kids and it really is impacting badly on you, pick up the phone, ring someone.
Yeah.
Talk to your mates. Don't just stew.
Don't stew.
Also, like to say hi to Greg Andreessen, one of our team, who's at the moment travelling overseas, getting some interviews, and he's somewhere between London and Vietnam.
He's having a good time with his girlfriend. That's what he's doing.
I wasn't going to mention that.
All right. Well, look, that's it for us. From Dads on the Air 2007, thank you so much for listening to us, and we hope we've brought a lot of entertaining, interesting and different material to you through the year, and we look forward to coming back next year where we'll be bigger, better more entertaining and more amusing than ever before.
With dads on the air, we're here 'cause we care. We ask for.